This is Block by Block, a community news program from WPPM LP 106.5 FM, where we explore issues affecting the Philadelphia area with the news reports from members of the community. I'm Ahmed Hassouna.
And I'm Tafari Robertson. In the next half hour, we'll hear stories from our community news reporters about a longtime Philly educator's second act, a local nonprofit working with emerging filmmakers, and a social club that brings people together for conversation and crafting.
But first, the U.S. is getting ready to celebrate 250 years of existence, but an art exhibition in Philadelphia is marking more than 250 years of community resistance. Block by Block reporter Dunya Ramadan stopped by the Tilt Institute in North Philly last month for the opening night of the How We Stay Free exhibit and brings us this story.
As you walk through the halls of the Tilt Gallery, you'll see photos on the walls and hear speeches echoing through the room documenting decades of community struggle in Philadelphia. The exhibit continues the work of an anthology led by Christopher Rogers and Fajr Muhammad called How We Stay Free, Notes on a Black Uprising. And the How We Stay Free exhibit features the work of four Philly-based photographers and media artists who are also activists who are part of the movements they document. Hundreds of people attended the opening in April, and as I walked in, featured longtime activist and photographer Joe Piet led me to one of his photos.
This is one of my favorite because it's hundreds of people protesting for Palestine, hundreds of people holding signs, hands off Lebanon now, and weapons shipments to Israel now. There's a banner that says America is the head of the snake.
Whether it's a protest for Palestinian liberation or Save Chinatown, Joe says the fact that all these photos are right next to each other on the walls here is important.
I want them to see how all these photos are one movement. All of us are fighting the same capitalist, imperialist structure of this country.
And Christopher Rogers agrees. He's former museum director of Paul Robeson House and co-lead of the anthology How We Stay Free, Notes on a Black Uprising, which was published as a book in 2022. Rogers says the book is rooted in Black radical tradition and presents a collection of connected reflections, prose, and poetry from Philly community members on the front lines struggle in response to the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis in 2020.
You know, when we did How We Stay Free, which is focused on like a Black-led uprising, but if you get into the demands, much of the writers in there, they're referencing all these other movements and they see it as like this sort of interconnected thing. So how are we building this coalition, right? And who do we see within that? And how do we expand that? How do we continue to sort of like imagine our connectedness and solidarity that cuts across these imaginary and false borders?
The book is also rooted in the internationalist, anti-colonial, anti-imperial spirit and tradition of Black civil rights activist Paul Nuslanda Robeson. The exhibit at Tilt is meant to create a living, visual, documented archive and space of ongoing, connected community struggles and movement from and of those on the front lines. Featured community activist and videographer Sunny Singh's work brings these worlds together into one struggle through an interactive video installation. He built a statistical framework that takes a collection of 5 hours worth of speeches he filmed from 2020 until the present and identifies portions of the speeches that are semantically similar. Sunny clicked on a dot on the projected map on the wall to show us.
You can click on a point, and it brings up that moment in the speech. And so this white line here, this thread, I call it like a constellation, shows the narrative flow of this speech and how it connects different topics. People that are speaking at an anti-ICE rally are oftentimes using very similar language to what people are saying at a rally for Mumia Abu-Jamal or prison abolition or whatnot. There are links and connections between these different movements and a shared language that if we can harness it, we can continue to attack the same common oppressor, which is colonialism, imperialism, and capitalism.
Another thread that connects the participants in these different struggles is that there are often moments of joy, play, and creativity, even amidst the darkness. At the exhibit, longtime activist and photographer Harvey Finkel points us to a moment he captured at the tent city erected in the 1990s by homeless Philadelphians resisting unaffordable housing and welfare cuts.
It's a gentleman, young kid, doing backflips on mattresses that are discarded and trash in the lots of American Street at the time. But American Street was like a dump. There were about three or four kids doing backflips and so forth on this, enjoying themselves, making something out of trash.
It's simple moments like these that give the exhibit its name. Collaborator Christopher Rogers says it's how people respond to oppressive conditions that show how we stay free.
No one drops from the sky a revolutionary. A revolutionary is made by how we respond to conditions. You know, so how are we responding to conditions, Philadelphia? That's the question.
Walking through the exhibit, you see that Philadelphians respond to these conditions together, rain or shine. Sometimes it can look like shutting down the Ben Franklin Bridge for the first time in history. Featured activist and photographer Mike Arison takes us to this photo.
You have all the line of traffic at a standstill, people coming out of their cars trying to figure out what's going on. And there's a lone man holding a flagpole with three Palestine flags underneath a sign that says, "Welcome to the Ben Franklin Bridge." This was a moment of everyone all coming together as a group doing this. But it's each individual person as an individual making the choice to come out to fight this fight.
In the fight for liberation, we find our power in community and connectedness. And many of the people attending the opening also found themselves in more than one picture hanging on the walls of the gallery, while also finding themselves reuniting with those they shared these memories with.
You had that one shot. Are you in the other one, too?
I'm in that one. I'm in that one, too.
You're in three shots?
Mm-hmm.
It shows how active you are.
How do you guys know each other?
From the UC townhomes. I think that's when we first met. The Coalition to Save the UC Townhomes, which is an affordable housing complex at 40th and Market.
Exhibit collaborator Christopher Rogers says this exchange of connection, relationship, shared memory is what the exhibit is all about.
That's what the work is in terms of making the revolution irresistible. It's building that up, right? And allowing folks to see themselves within these movements, within the sort of liberatory horizon. Because by us doing this work is how we're going to stay free. By documenting these stories, by archiving these examples, by lifting up these voices, is the work of how we're going to stay free.
The exhibit will continue to run until June 27th, and there will be a conversation hosted on May 21st at 6 p.m. at Tilt Institute, featuring these embedded community documentarians. You can find out more by visiting tiltinstitute.org. For Block by Block, I'm Dunya Ramadan.
A few years ago, many people in Philadelphia were upset when the Mathematics, Civics, and Sciences Charter School at Broad and Spring Garden shut down with little notice. The school had been known for its high graduation rate, but when the founder announced she was ready to retire, with nobody ready to step in and take her place, the K-12 school shut down in 2024. But Block by Block's Cheryl Jones reports that the school's founder is continuing to serve the community by providing tutoring for students and training for educators.
Veronica Joyner has been a force for change in education for over 50 years and has dedicated her career to ensuring that all students, regardless of background, receive a high-quality education and the support they need to succeed. In 1984, she founded PUBS, which stands for Parents United for Better Schools. With PUBS, she has fought for education reform and has provided essential programs like tutoring, parental advocacy, and scholarship assistance. And in 1999, she opened Mathematics, Civics, and Science Charter School, also known as MCSCS, where she built an educational model that blends academic achievement with community service. reinforcing the idea that students should not only strive for success, but also give back to society. But after operating for over 25 years and becoming one of Philadelphia's oldest and largest charter schools, MCSCS closed its doors at the end of the 2024 school year when Veronica announced her retirement.
I decided that I was tired after 55 years in the field and that I could retire and take some time to do some of the things that I wanted to do, only to find that I'm back doing education and assisting parents, and that I didn't retire. I actually rewired, and I donated my entire yearly salary back to the school. So I'm actually a volunteer.
Veronica now coordinates tutoring for students and provides workshops for parents and educators. But she also felt a responsibility to the students and staff of MCSCS. She helped find placement for them when the school closed.
And I got everyone placed, even my teachers, my aides, and anybody else that needs a job. And I said, okay, I can now sit back after 55 years in the field and rest, only to find that parents were calling me from all over the city saying their kids were failing for larger classrooms, no teachers due to the shortage, and that they didn't know what to do. So I said, well, we can get tutoring. So I called all over the city. There were no free tutoring programs with certified teachers. So I just started, because I own the building, I then opened the school back up for the education center.
The Mathematics, Civics, and Science Charter School may be closed, but in the same building, Veronica now runs the Mathematics, Civics, and Sciences Education Center of Philadelphia, which offers comprehensive tutoring services for students in grades 1 through 12, Monday through Thursday. This program goes beyond traditional academics, offering state-certified teachers, college and career counseling, and personalized attention in small classroom settings. Students receive tailored support in all subjects.
And we tutored over 200 kids last year, and it looked like we're going over 300 this year. Students come in after school from 4 to 6, and the first hour we're going over whatever they're doing in school to make sure they understand it. And I find that many children are deficient in foundation skills. Like, children are given measurements and they can't add whole numbers or carry numbers or borrow numbers or multiply. They can't read because they're not being taught the phonics. So we do that the second hour. So they're here for 2 hours and the grades have really increased. And that's because my teachers are trained and I work with students myself.
You can get more information about tutoring programs by emailing info@mcsc.org. For Block by Block, I'm Cheryl Jones.
Many Philly-based filmmakers leave the city to New York and Los Angeles to find industry jobs. But Block by Block reporter Anaya Davis brings us a story about one local nonprofit that's trying to bring a bit of Hollywood to Philadelphia.
Philadelphia Film Factory, also known as Film Factory with a PH, is a nonprofit organization founded by twin sisters Eli and Lou Bevins. The twins are multifaceted artists who grew up in Philadelphia. Their company, Eli Lou Entertainment, produces film, theater, and live events in the region. And 7 years ago, they started Film Factory, first as a for-profit part of their business, before becoming a nonprofit that helps boost filmmakers in the region through classes, workshops, and networking opportunities, among other things. Lou says they started Film Factory to address what they saw as a lack of resources and opportunities for filmmakers in Philadelphia.
A lot of it was just sort of doing work in like Los Angeles and kind of roaming around. And we were like, we see a need for education and opportunity and resources in Philadelphia for filmmakers and content creators that we decided, you know, to kick off, whether it's film events, screening, showing other filmmakers' work, or, you know, education piece and training. So we just wanted to bring all that back. So it pretty much started just with something we wanted to help filmmakers. And then we saw a greater need, you know, just to turn it into a nonprofit, something bigger. And it's been going well.
Since then, Film Factory has served over 100 students in both youth and adult programming. Some of the classes include an intro to filmmaking class, on-screen camera acting, and the Take One Youth Film Program. Partnering with New Millennium Studios and Primos PA, students get hands-on development and create a proof-of-concept film. I visited a rehearsal one Monday evening.
Hello, I'm Breon Clark. I'm playing Rome, and we're here at Film Factory rehearsal. We're going through our scenes. Now we have prompts, so we'd be able to feel the natural footsteps and everything with the scene, and looking pretty good.
My name is Isabella, and I'm getting ready to set up a light. We're going to use this C-stand. We're going to thread it here and then add a lantern.
Even in rehearsal, the students are all in different subclasses based on what they want to learn. Eli says they developed these programs based on what they heard from creators in the region.
It's based off of what the community actually needs, which is why I love our courses, because it's not something we're assuming the community needs. It's us going, okay, what are people actually saying they need? And then going out and creating those courses.
Eli and Lou first noticed how important resources were when taking part in their film club in high school and realizing it had no cameras, so they were unable to create films. It's one of the reasons why access has become important to them. Lou says she's always excited to see people who'd never thought about filmmaking come through Film Factory, develop new skills, and consider careers in the arts.
A lot of the stories coming out of Philadelphia, you haven't heard it before, and just getting, you know, a camera or a script in someone's hand, you know, it just kind of opens up new doors that otherwise would have never, you wouldn't know that that person even exists or had something to say. So I think access is a really big part of why we do what we do. I think the first time we ever did it was a school career day, and it was a young girl in class, and she lit up when she saw us, and she said, I never met a filmmaker in my life. And she ended up coming through our program and was really good at filmmaking. And just those moments like that, just hearing everyone else's story, reaffirms when we're tired, when we're exhausted, when it's draining, that we're doing the right thing. So I think it's what others take away from our program that I'm most excited about.
And it's not just the youth that see a future within the film industry. Philadelphian postman Dantes Jolly found out about the classes through an ad on Instagram. Writing had been something he pursued in college, but he put it on the back burner for a 9-to-5 job. He believes that these classes have helped him explore his creative side again.
It was always just hard for me to get back into my writing. I would just get writer's block and, you know, just wasn't exercising that part of my craft. So when I saw the opportunity of Film Factory, I said, this is an opportunity to work with some people that's going to hold me accountable to get to, like, the places that I've dreamed of going. And that's why it was so important. You know, the best time is always now, you know, and I definitely wanted to take advantage of the perfect opportunity. I said, you know, around my work schedule and stuff like that, so I didn't have to quit my job to start it. I didn't have to break the bank to be a part of the classes and everything. So that was a blessing, I'm going to be honest with you.
Film Factory doesn't just provide training for budding filmmakers. Eli and Lou have also helped former students get grants for their own projects as fiscal sponsors and find positions working on projects being filmed in the region and across the USA. Eli says that in addition to developing more creative talent in the Philly region, a big part of the goal is to forge connections so that those filmmakers can find work locally. This even includes small roles that many forget help the film industry.
We advocate for creatives and filmmakers who are here in the city and to get with us, because this thing doesn't work without you all. It works when we all come together, including the economy that surrounds the film industry here. So that's local businesses, shops, restaurants. And so we want people to know that we're here and that we're open to partnering so that we can really grow this thing and take it to the next level. And so come learn, get your idea out of your head and actually get it produced and created. So we're here. That's what we want people to know.
For Block by Block, I'm Anaya Davis.
When you're in school, it's relatively easy to make new friends and find things to do, because you're surrounded by other people your age who are going through similar things. but it can be a lot harder for young adults. A new social club in Philly is working to change that by hosting events throughout the city that offer young adults and others a chance to gather, make friendships and connections, and get to know Philadelphia better. Block by Block reporter Sophia Mattia brings us the story.
On a sunny Sunday afternoon in April, dozens of people sat down in Washington Square Park with their crochet hooks, embroidery hoops, paintbrushes, and other crafting materials. This gathering was a bring-your-own-craft event hosted by Dessert for Dinner Social Club, a creative club that brings people together through events, crafts, and sweet treats. While this event was held in Center City, I met people who came from all over Philadelphia, and some who came from as far away as New York. They brought all sorts of different crafting projects to work on.
We have some watercolors, we're going to paint maybe some bookmarks.
I am working on an oil pastel painting.
This is going to be a scarf. It's a baby right now, but it will be longer.
That was Faith, Nicole, and Spencer. Madison Seidel founded Dessert Before Dinner in March 2025, just a few months after moving to the city.
When I first was building this out, I didn't really have a concrete plan for it, and I think that kind of helped with the success of it. Like, I wasn't putting a ton of pressure on myself for it to be a certain thing. And I'm still really not, you know. I want it to be beneficial for people. I want people to feel like they can connect with others, express themselves creatively if that's something they're into, and feel that sense of community. So I think as long as I'm, like, those things are being achieved, it can be whatever it wants to be.
But why is it called Dessert Before Dinner?
It kind of reminds me of, like, you don't necessarily need to wait for a certain opportunity or occasion or something to just, like, have something sweet in your life. So I think kind of that, and also just trying to be like a sweet community. And I do like to incorporate like baked goods and sweets into events, but I think mostly like just have fun and do it whenever you want, like eat dessert before dinner if you want to.
Some of the people I met at the Bring Your Own Craft event, like Rana and Tara, said this low pressure but encouraging environment is a big part of the appeal.
I am looking for friends. I recently moved to the city and I'm just trying to be outside, see more places, and have the opportunity to meet more people. And this felt like a low stakes type of event to meet people.
I feel like there's not a lot of spaces for, like, especially young women to do stuff for free. I like making friends. It's an easier way to make friends than, like, going up to someone at a bar or some kind of paid event. But even without necessarily making friends, it is just nice to, like, be in a community with other people in a way that, like, allows us all to engage in things that we enjoy without necessarily having the pressure of, like, having a conversation or making friends or, like, really forming a deep connection. It's just, like, we all clearly have a mutual interest in just, like, being outdoors and making something, and that's nice.
One of Madison's goals with Dessert Before Dinner is to provide a safe space for marginalized communities, including women, queer and trans folk, and people of color. And many of the people who attend are members of those communities. But Madison says everyone is welcome at Dessert Before Dinner events.
If you are kind and respectful to everyone else who's there, it doesn't matter what your gender identity is, what your sexual identity, like, none of that matters. The overarching thing is just people need to be respectful.
Some people who attend the events are looking for something to enrich their lives. At the Bring Your Own Craft event, I met Sahana, who says these events have helped her connect with her artistic side and meet people.
I think it's just nice to, like, do something, like, not with a screen. Like, we're always looking at our phones or watching TV or for work, I'm staring at a computer screen, obviously. And I've always been into, like, arts and crafts when I was a kid. So it's kind of nice as an adult to get back into that. And, yeah, the community is super welcoming. And everyone I met at any event I've gone to has been really nice.
Dessert Before Dinner founder Madison says the events have also had a positive impact on her own life. The event series became so popular on social media that she was able to leverage her experience into a new career. She quit her full-time job last summer and has been doing freelance social media work since then. And she's also met a lot of people through Dessert Before Dinner.
You know, I originally made this community so people could find other people, but it has also brought me some of my favorite people, which is so cool. And just the support I receive from people that are involved in it, people that are not involved in it, is so cool.
Madison says some of the people she's met through Dessert Before Dinner are now a key part of the event series. Soph and their girlfriend Mickey provide beverages like coffee and matcha at events under the business name Cherise Maison. And Soph says it's been a great partnership for everyone involved.
I've just been trying to get my foot in the door with, like, doing this stuff, and Mickey makes fun syrups, and Maddie loves matcha, and I love coffee. It's just, like, a great group to be working with.
But Mickey says her dessert for dinner experience is about much more than just the business.
So my birthday was about 2 weeks ago, and I was seeing everybody who was there, and probably like a good chunk of the girls who ended up attending, I'd all met this year from before dinner. And I was like, I can't imagine my life without you guys in it, and it's crazy to me that you've only been in my life for this short amount of time.
Although Dessert Before Dinner has only been around for a little over a year, it has grown a lot in that time. It also now hosts smaller ticketed indoor events with local businesses such as pottery making, yoga, and Pilates. And also craft cafes, which are made possible by Charisse Maison and Maddie's friend Logan, who is a pastry chef. But the Bring Your Own Craft events continue to be some of the most popular. For Block by Block, I'm Sophia Mattia.
Block by Block is produced by Amadi Braxton, Abby Cruz, Anaya Davis, Cheryl Jones, Charlie Klein, Corinne Martin, Sophia Mattia, Milan Parker, Donya Ramadan, and us,
Ahmad Hassuna,
and Tafari Robertson. Corinne Martin is our board operator tonight.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor for WPPM, Pita Liu, Radio Operations Manager, and Allison Durham is Radio Program Manager.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Block by Block featuring more stories about issues affecting life in the Philly region. And you can find past episodes of the show on Philly Cam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, and wherever else you find your podcast.
Thanks for listening.
One final note. The Pennsylvania primary election is less than a week away. Democratic Congressman Dwight Evans will retire at the end of his term in January. And on Tuesday, May 19th, voters in Philadelphia will choose their nominees to replace him. Voters will also cast ballots in races for governor, lieutenant governor, and state house races. And there are two ballot questions Philadelphians can weigh in on. One is whether the city of Philadelphia should establish a retirement savings board as part of a plan to create a system that would let workers in Philly contribute to a city-run retirement plan if they work for a company that doesn't already offer one. The other ballot question would make the office of the Youth Ombudsperson a permanent part of city government. This office helps advocate for young people who are involved in the juvenile justice or child welfare systems, among other things. Polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, May 19th, for Election Day. You can check your voter registration status, find your polling place, or get other information by visiting vote.pa.gov.